Thank you, Dr. Papas. I'm Zoe Gregorian. I actually did not participate in data collection, but I worked as a research assistant and was part of the data analysis, so I'll be presenting instead of Dr. Asghari. The title of our study, as you can see, is Community Perception, Acceptance, Stigma, and Knowledge of HIV Prevention and Treatment in Urban Ethiopia. It's a qualitative approach. And authors have no conflicts of interest to declare. So, why did we do this? Effective disease management needs to take into account social determinants and other barriers to care. Right now, as of now, the prevalence of HIV in Ethiopia is around 2%, with 7% in urban areas. And while resources and access to ARV medication certainly need to be scaled up, there are still social issues involved that needs to be taken into account. Stigma and discrimination are already well-documented barriers, significantly hampering prevention and disease management, not only for HIV, well-documented for other diseases as well. And there's anecdotal evidence contributing to upholding misconceptions about treatment, alternative cures, and prevention behavior within the community. We know in general that these issues affect mental health, adherence, testing, treatment seeking, but we don't have enough information from the community itself. There is little qualitative data assessing community perceptions in urban Ethiopia. So again, these issues aren't unique to HIV and AIDS, but stigma is especially pervasive and especially harmful when it comes to HIV and AIDS. So it's important to look at this qualitatively and to ask individuals and communities how they think about HIV, how those perceptions manifest themselves in daily life, and especially how those ideas are formed and what shapes them. So we sought out to do just that. We sought out to explore the community perceptions and stigma, discrimination experienced by people living with HIV and AIDS in this area, and what are the effects of these issues and ideas on the daily life and the daily healthcare. Ultimately, we wanted to find out, are there any strategies, what are the strategies you can identify to address these barriers? So the study took place with the help of Worldwide Orphans Foundation and the WWO AHF Family Health Center in urban Addis Ababa. We spoke with 52 adults. Ages were ranging from 18 to 61, average age was 33. And we broke up into focus groups of 3 to 5 individuals, separated by HIV positive and negative status. Focus group sessions began with open-ended questions and follow-up questions based on the responses we received. Translator was present, and the sessions were recorded, transcribed, analyzed for major themes. Participants were mostly female, as you can see, and education varied. We had, for the most part, there was an 8th grade level of education. A few had completed a bachelor's degree, a few had no schooling, a few had a high school diploma. And there were a total of 17 known and disclosed HIV-positive participants, so they were in focus groups together, and the other participants of either HIV-negative, undisclosed, or unknown status were in focus groups as well. So the major themes that emerged were centered on issues of transmission, holy water, treatment, ARV treatment, and stigma and discrimination. Almost every participant identified sexual transmission, contaminated needles, blood contamination, and childbirth as vehicles for transmission, but there are confusion about other risks and inconsistent preventative behavior, which can be problematic. Holy water was a recurrent topic of discussion and seems to take on a polarizing role in the community, particularly with regard to ARV treatment. Stigma, community pressure, fear, and discrimination emerged as major hindrances for people with HIV, creating difficulties to stay consistently on ARV medication. Okay. So discussing prevention strategies and modes of transmission revealed insight that helped to understand daily experiences that were discussed later. In addition to monogamy, condom use, and safer handling of blood, participants told us that it's commonly thought that one must avoid sharing a room or sharing utensils or eating in the same room or shaking hands with an infected person. Even sharing the same house is potentially seen as a risk. Some of our HIV-positive participants told us that they had the same beliefs prior to their own diagnosis when they started receiving more information at the healthcare facility. And they had even, they told us stories, a couple of them told us stories about isolating their own family members who were infected with HIV because of fear of infection. And we have to note that some of these behaviors, they originate from preventative and not necessarily stigmatizing intentions. So we can look at some of the things that people told us about holy water and treatment. So you can see quotes. So almost every participant discussed holy water. It's a major theme. Especially in the context of being a replacement for treatment, this creates problems and internal conflict for people who are on ARV medication. Anecdotally, there's a shared confidence in the curing power of holy water. This goes for both HIV-positive and HIV-negative participants, but the divide becomes apparent when discussing treatment at the same time. Less than half of the HIV-negative participants said they believe that ARV treatment is effective in treating HIV. The majority of HIV-positive participants do believe in it. Ultimately, the message for several years from the religious community has been that holy water's effectiveness rests on the strength of one's faith, and it must be taken alone. So the commitment to holy water is sometimes seen itself as a measure of faith, and this obviously creates a dilemma if general awareness about HIV and treatment effectiveness is lacking. So we can see a little bit more about what people told us. And these were the kind of sentiments that were repeated over and over about holy water. So treatment helps to live healthy and longer, but it's not curative, but the holy water can cure HIV. So this was the widely believed sentiment. And more than half of the HIV-negative participants, in fact, almost all of them, told us that HIV treatment and holy water cannot be taken together, and they're incompatible. And it's unanimously confirmed that this was the message from spiritual leaders in the past. So essentially, if you wish to be cured and you wish to rid yourself of the disease, you might have to stop your treatment. Out of 17 HIV-positive participants, all but two said that they had felt pressure to stop their ARV treatment from the community, and more than half had indeed recounted that they had stopped their treatment at some point for this reason. Okay. And so this leads us to our next theme, which was stigma. Speaking with HIV-positive participants, it's clear that stigma plays an important role in their daily experiences and interferes with care. HIV-negative participants were only partially aware of the pressures faced by HIV-positive people, and they also told us that they did not believe that HIV-positive people were pressured to stop the treatment. So in addition to pressure to stop treatment, there's also just the issue of fear of being seen taking medication and having your status discovered. We can move on. So what are the consequences of all of these issues? In fact, the consequences are quite real. HIV-positive participants told us they fear losing their home or their job, and a few actually recounted their own stories of being kicked out of their house when the landlord saw them taking medication. One woman told us that this happened in the middle of the night. In addition, they also face isolation, physical isolation from their family, community rejection, and it leads to a very difficult crossroads where adhering to your medication puts everything else in your life at risk, so your livelihood, your connections to your community, and even your health. So we wanted to know what, if any, are indicators of positive change, and is this changing? So these are some of the things that people told us. In the early time, the messages delivered through media were fearful, but now it has changed. They teach us how to live positively with HIV. This is what one participant told us about images from the media. And at the same time, another positive trend noted was that spiritual leaders are beginning to encourage taking treatment at the same time as holy water and spiritual remedies and fasting. As you can see, one participant told us this is because they have seen in their eyes that many people have died after they drop their treatment and take holy water only. So this is an important venue, and it reaches both HIV-negative and positive participants. So HIV is probably the most stigmatized illness in history, and it's partially due to how recurrent images in the media have portrayed those that are affected. And we can see that general misconceptions, limited knowledge about treatment, and stigma about medication and discrimination create real barriers to care in terms of prevention and disease management. And we need to address these issues systematically. Areas that have been successful in turning around HIV rates have done so not without incorporating strategies that address stigma and discrimination. So what are the next steps? Education and awareness programs ought to emphasize ARV treatment effectiveness and the need to stay on medication. Misconceptions about modes of transmission and real and perceived risks need to be openly discussed. So it's important for HIV to be visible. We also need initiatives that are culturally adapted, locally relevant, and more qualitative study to explore these issues within the community. We need to speak with local organizations and find out from the community what strategies, what initiatives would be effective. So international organizations need to provide support for NGOs and the community organizations and community forums that are already in place. Participants told us about Kibele community forums, about churches and schools and places where information is already being shared. So we need to connect the healthcare community, healthcare practitioners, with these forums that are already influencing people. And of course, all of this needs policy support, top-down approaches, and both horizontal and vertical strategies. We need to continue, of course, to scale up access to ARV treatment and to testing. Without that, of course, none of this is going to help. And we need to conduct further exploration and qualitative research to address community dynamics like this, identify effective strategies, the effective strategies that will actually come from within the community, and address community-wide structural and environmental barriers. So I think that is about all my time. So we want to thank Dr. Sophie Mengistu and the community health workers at Worldwide Orphans Foundation and Addis Ababa for their outstanding support. And thank you.